kid with curly ginger hair who's into theater, landing the title role in the musical Annie would be a dream come true. Unfortunately, if you're a boy, it's gonna be a hard knock life landing the role. But don't worry, the sun will come out tomorrow, and then you'll be on Easy Street!
Today, we got Kenny, well, Beckett Kenny, a ginger-haired comedian who understands that you're never fully dressed without a smile. Listen as Beckett Kenny joins us to talk about his childhood dream of being cast as Little Orphan Annie and how he sometimes regrets roasting audience members.
Plus, a woman goes on a rampage after finding out her girlfriend is cheating with her mom.
What really happened with the whole police pig Starbucks cup scandal?
And queer media personality Jonathan Van Ness becomes the first solo non-female to grace the cover of Cosmo UK in 35 years. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
It's a hard knock life for us. It's a hard knock life for us.
Instead of treated,
we get tricked.
Instead of kisses,
we get hit. It's a hard knock life.
Our guest today is comedian Beckett Kenny, who always has a song in his heart because he is a Broadway baby with stars in his eyes. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Beckett.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you guys. I'm excited to be on here.
We got Beckett.
we got
Beckett
Annie.
Beckett Kenny.
So when I play A Hard Knock Life for you, what goes on through your mind? Because that was one of your earliest memories in show business of insatiably desiring to be in Annie, the musical. You're a redhead.
Yes, I am. I am naturally a curly redhead. I thought not only would it be an intelligent performance decision, but also a fiscally responsible decision, truly, for any theater to cast me as Annie. No wig needed. and yet they refused. I do think it is homophobia that led me to this.
Because they only wanted cisgendered girls to be cast in Annie, and you're not.
That. And I nailed my audition, and I know that for a fact.
What did you say?
I believe I sang a song from Anything Goes. It was probably the titular song, Anything Goes.
And how old were you that you were singing this song?
Oh, God. It was probably like in between fifth and sixth grade. Oh, so wow. I must have been like 11.
Did you sing the part about the nudist studios part?
I don't think so. I think I got 16 bars. I didn't choose the craziest. I think it'd be fun if I just did a medley of all the dirtiest parts of Anything Goes, where it's like nude studios, and then you're
Gigolos.
The top. And she talks about coke, doesn't she?
I don't remember. Maybe.
You know, in the movie Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, it starts off with a Cantonese version of that song.
Really,
I haven't seen it. Sung by Steven Spielberg's now wife.
Oh,
yeah.
Who's he married to?
What is her name exactly? I'm like the blonde woman and Steven Spielberg.
Wait, is it the love interest?
Yes.
Oh, he's married to her.
He met her on the set of that film.
Really?
He divorced Amy Irving.
Kate Capshaw.
My friend used to design holiday cards for Steven Spielberg and Amy Irving, but I don't know if that continued after he divorced Amy and moved on to Kate Capshaw.
Probably not.
Very fun. Okay.
Although Harrison Ford threw a whip around Kate Capshaw at the end of the film.
Yeah.
It was Steven Spielberg who sealed the deal.
So you auditioned for Annie.
Yes.
You did not get the part of Annie, but you got other parts.
Yes, I was cast in the production as an ensemble member of not even the orphans, but one of like the dirty street urchin kids, which was, I didn't even get a solo. I remember the guys who got a solo were straight boys, and they were not good singers, and it was actually very insulting.
Because you went to high school in Peoria, Illinois.
Yes,
and so this was an elementary school production, or
I was in middle school.
It was
all ages production, so there were actual adults playing like Daddy Warbucks and all that.
Oh wow!
But there were the kids were played by kids.
Was the Daddy Warbucks wearing a bald cap?
Yes.
Hot.
Was he hot?
I cannot picture him, so I imagine not. I don't remember anyone in that production. I still didn't really understand my sexuality at that point, but I don't remember anyone in that production awakening it for me, like being like, whoa, okay, this is.
Well, if you ever got a chance to watch the Aileen Quinn film from the early 80s, I guess it was.
I think I've seen.
Has Carol Burnett in it? Has Tim Curry in it?
Oh, I've seen it. And they have Anne Rankin in it. And I remember she does like this, like.
Bernadette Peters?
Yes, Bernadette Peters. It's a good cast. Mm-hmm. And Tim Burton, right?
Yes.
No, not Tim Burton.
Not Tim Burton, the film. Tim Curry.
Curry, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Albert Finney is Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
He was not so hot.
And the thing about the film, and I don't know if a lot of people are aware of it, is that there's a lot of discussions about socialism and class warfare in favor of taxing the wealthy. And FDR is convincing Daddy Warbucks in one famous scene to raise taxes so the poor orphan children in America could have a home and a life, better life to live. And Daddy Warbucks is dead set against it. And it's Little Orphan Annie, played by Eileen Quinn, who's singing the song Tomorrow. That's what the song is about. It's about everybody contributing to society so we have a better tomorrow. Here's a classic scene from the 1982 Annie film where FDR and Daddy Warbucks and Eleanor Roosevelt debate the merits of the New Deal.
The New Deal, in my opinion, is badly planned, badly organized, and badly administered. You don't think your program's through, Franklin. You don't think what they're going to do to the economy in the long run. People don't eat in the long run.
People can't feed their children.
The lucky ones end up in orphanages.
The older ones are abandoned to steal, to starve.
The business of this country is business. You have to organize.
Take them off the dole and put them to work. That is precisely what I intend to do.
In the national parks, building camps, clearing trails, fighting fires, planting trees.
Hold it, hold it.
I want to feed them and house them and pay them. Not much, but enough to send home to their parents so they can hold their heads up again and be proud to be American.
That's a swell idea.
It isn't a swell idea, Annie. It's mistaken foolishness. Big-hearted and empty-headed. Which parks? Which children? What will it cost? Who's going to organize it? Who's going to run it?
I was hoping you would.
Me?
And Annie?
Leaping lizards. How could I help?
You could help us recruit the young people.
Now hold everything.
Many of them have given up hope, Annie. They think their government doesn't care whether they live or die. With your help, we could convince them that with a little extra effort on their
part... I want to say something.
There's this song I used to sing in the orphanage when I'd get sad. It always cheered me up.
Eleanor.
Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none.
Oh, Franklin.
You'll help us too, won't you, Oliver?
Think of the children. Think of Annie.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
Saying Oliver, that's order from your commander-in-chief.
There'll be sun.
Eleanor?
I can't sing.
Sing.
Tomorrow, clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow. Till
there's no long for the president. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin and grin and say, everybody, Republicans too, Oliver, sing.
The sun come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on till tomorrow. Come what may.
That is gorgeous. And it's interesting because it's almost the exact opposite of what the original cartoon was, like a very conservative, like that kind of propaganda. Like
it was regressive.
The rich is the savior.
Yes. Annie. Daddy Warbucks is like the good guy. And but in the play, yes, it's very pro FDR, very pro New Deal. And then they have that song, which is like, fuck Edgar Hoover, which is one of the two songs I was in. I was in the fuck J. Edgar Hoover song and the song about naming Sandy.
Aw.
And so for you, like, you know, Little Orphan Annie, the musical, represents something much bigger than just, you know, being in a show. It's about like your hopes and dreams as a
as a misfit, as an orphan, as a queer person. Because I believe that queer people are kind of like the middle children of society. Mm. And especially when you're an artist or a performer or a comedian, you're also irrationally begging people who may not necessarily care for you to love you.
Oh, yeah. That what you said hit me right there. That's very resonant. Yes, I do definitely relate with Annie in her like, oh, wow. Like, I think what I like about the whole musical is the whole thing's kind of like, oh, wow, wee. Like, it's very much like, I'm making it in New York, you know? And there's like the start
of Liza Minnelli could play it.
It has a very Liza Minnelli energy, the whole thing.
I can make it here. I can make it anywhere. Yeah, because Annie is a character who really survives by her wits and her ability to sort of make friendships. Yes. And even the bullies in her orphanage eventually come to her rescue and they help her escape so she can then. It's a kind of weird plot, right? It's like she's trying to desperately escape and she has this stray dog named Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason, Daddy Warbucks strikes a fancy to her and they're like, it can't be any other orphan girl. It has to be little orphan Annie.
Yeah. Well, doesn't, oh God, I can't remember the show.
It's been a while.
I think it was the Grace or like the one that Anne Rankin plays in the mm-hmm. movie.
The assistant.
Yes. I think she pushes him and then he slowly falls in love with her when, because
they brought her in for like, you're going to be for PR. You're going to be here for a day. And then they're just like, oh, she melted his heart.
We got Annie. Boo-doo.
Well, because Annie cared about all the servants. When she gets into his mansion, she's not about the money. She's about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a populist hero in the film, at least. And so I think that, you know, for a lot of kids and, you know, people ask me all the time, it's like, why aren't all these Disney movies like, the parents die, the kids are orphan, everybody's in danger. I'm like, it's because it makes us pay attention. Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. That's very cool. I know that most of what I want, in my head, all I wanted was just to be the main character and to star. But I think you're right that I was all about the heroic part of it.
Do you at home ever like sing, the sun will come out tomorrow? My
God. If you would have known me in like fifth, basically all of middle school, it was just like I sang nonstop. I did like musicals, I was like, I have to like get so good at singing, and I would just like listen to every singer like from the history of Broadway up until now and just like try to replicate what they were doing and like try to figure out like how do you get this vibrato and like how do you, you know.
Did you do it on your own or did you get music lessons?
I did get musical lessons, but not until my junior year of high school. So I was mostly self-taught.
Mm. So you had some singing training?
Yes. I'm
like a mezzo soprano or a tenor?
At the time, I was so sure that I was a mezzo soprano and I would be until I died. But now as time, I'm a tenor.
Yeah. And as you get older, it's like, if you listen to the early, the show 15 years ago, it's like, hi everyone.
And you're like, oh boy, right. Feast of fun. Yeah.
And so in terms of like the musicals, and that's been a big dream of you, but big dream of yours. But in the last couple of years, you've been really diving deep into stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And you were involved in this show called Paid or Pain.
Yes.
Where you were asked to sing on stage in an American Idol kind of style
competition. No, it wasn't singing. It was stand-up.
Stand-up. Okay. Yes. And if they liked your material, they would pay you.
Yes.
But if they hated your material, they would physically torture you on stage.
Yeah, so it was like a dominatrix, and I kind of thought that it was like a kind of like an S&M show, so it might like collect an eclectic crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it didn't, I like performed to like seas of camouflage, like guys in like baseball caps, like real Duck Dynasty like motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. And like I usually do well, which is sometimes surprising to people.
You're out in your act.
Yeah, and I'm pretty gay.
Like, no shit.
I'm pretty gay in stand-up. And sometimes you'll get like a comment that's kind of like, I don't know if that's a compliment afterwards, of like a guy being like, you know, I didn't really agree with what she were saying. Mm-hmm. Which I don't say anything political. It's just like, I don't know if I agree with the fact that you're a homo, but
because he doesn't politically endorse your desire to suck cocks.
Yes, he doesn't politically endorse dick sucking by other guys.
But he's approaching you because he's saying that I still like you, even though I secretly loathe you.
Yeah. Which in some ways is like kind of like a thing of like, okay, so I'm changing people's minds. And in other ways is a thing of like, oh, that's how people see me. It's like, you know. But anyway, so this was a homophobic audience.
Yeah. In paid or paying.
Yes. And I know because I had friends in the audience who were talking about like how like they overheard people talking about it. Mm-hmm. And like after the show. And I just ate a hot bag of shit. I bombed so bad.
How do you know you're bombing? They're just not laughing?
Yeah.
Are they booing?
The energy doesn't feel there. You don't get energized from the audience.
No. So like you're like performing and sometimes a crowd can be supportive, but like there's a hotness that you feel when you're bombing. That's like, it's like you start to sweat really, really bad. And like, you're just like, you feel like you're like treading water the whole time. It's if no one's laughing, it's one of the most painful.
So you bombed. And so, your pain increased because the dominatrix came out and did what to you?
So my pain increased because I bombed. Then there were judges and one of them was like, I've seen you before and you're very good, but tonight wasn't your night. And the other one was like, it's not because you're gay, but, I didn't like your jokes. I didn't like your performance. I don't think you're funny. I don't think you will be funny. Like, just like mean. It wasn't like one of those like funny roast jokes that's kind of, or you know, helpful criticism. He was just like, you're not funny. And then, and I've heard other gay performers say they've had problems with a specific comedian. I'm not going to say who it is, but
tell me after the show.
Okay. You probably don't know him. We'll take care of him. But he like, and then, so I bombed, got told I was not funny on stage by a fellow comedian, and then got electrocuted. And I wasn't giving the audience enough reaction, because at that point, I'm like, I'm not going to give them.
So she took out, like, a zapper?
Yeah, she took out, like, a zapper, zapped me, and then she flogged me on stage.
And did it hurt?
It did hurt. Aww. After a while, after a few hits, I was like, whew. And then I just remember going up to the sound booth and sobbing. Aww. And I did... both of the shows at the Laugh Factory that night, and the first one I did really well on. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I know that it was like shitty of that comedian to say that is because I like really killed the show before, and he like saw me kill. Mm-hmm. And he was, because he was right on before me. Mm-hmm. And
but they said some really mean things to you.
Like, oh, yeah.
What was it that they, the judges actually said to you that was like, it just seems really horribly cruel.
Well, just saying you're not funny is like,
the
cruel.
Worst you want to hear.
It's
was it the same set? Did you do the same set?
Yeah. So I killed the first show.
Okay.
Same set. Bombed the second show. Same set.
And so the audience can have that much impact on whether you're funny or not.
Of course. And also, it sometimes even if you're telling the same jokes, it's just one thing can be off and for a second, and then it just like. Also, honestly, looking back on it, I might have been doing mediocre on the show, but the audience was so bad. Even the people doing well, it was like, you couldn't tell they were doing well.
Is it fair to blame an audience, though, if they're not laughing?
I don't care. I'll do it.
You should love me unconditionally.
You know, I don't have the wherewithal to be like, They hate me.
What we're not talking about here is, and this, because this has been my experience, and when I was your age, trying to do stand-up comedy.
Oh, you tried stand-up comedy?
And when I was 18, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, really?
I was doing stand-up comedy for 2 years or stuff.
Why'd you quit?
In Austin, Texas.
It wasn't fun.
Life evolves and changes, and it was the early 90s. And it was the height of the AIDS crisis. There were no LGBTQ comedians on television. Ellen was not out. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, we were going to, part of being a queer person in the early 90s meant that you did a lot of vocational things. Vocational meaning things for the greater good and not for the money, not for the fame. So we were told, go out and fearlessly be yourself.
Yeah.
And I felt that the experience was that the audiences at comedy clubs in the early 90s, once they knew that I was gay, they didn't want to listen to anything I had to say. And there's this trust. There's this unspoken contract when you go to theater or you see comedy that there's a suspension of disbelief that you're here to see the person on that stage succeed because you want to be entertained. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the reality for a lot, and this is true to this day, for a lot of marginalized people, when they're up on a stage, they have to remember that pact. and overcome the hostility of a cruel, unkind world when they're presenting their information to the audience and expect that the audience is going to listen to them.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. And I still to this day, like, it's very hard to be specifically, I think, not to like be like, because there are so many things that we have so much privilege of, but like to be a queer man in stand up is something that like is still very hard for people to wrap their brains. And the reason I say that is because there's not a successful one. Mm-hmm. Like there's some who are coming up.
I think Mateo Lane's bank account would like to argue with you.
Oh, is he rich?
We don't know what's in there. Living in New York's very expensive.
Mateo Lane, I think, is very successful, mm-hmm. but I would still call him up and coming. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? He's not selling without out theaters. He's not going to play the Vic.
He's not getting a Netflix special.
He's doing a 15 minute Netflix special.
And part of it is like, I don't know if there's an infrastructure for that. I would like to build one. I'd like to have one where we mm-hmm. sort of like, build that kind of comedy scene
right.
where we have the next Dave Chappelle's and, you know, Richard Pryor's and Jerry Seinfeld's of the world. And part of that is it really does take a village for that to happen.
Right.
And we don't have that right now. Well, it's okay to not to have it, but it would be something nice to have.
Well, and I, Guy yeah. Branum talks about, the drag queen. What's the other one? Drag queen, like pinup boy, like, there's this dichotomy where like yeah. a lot of gay men are very interested in like someone they like or really want to fuck like this mm-hmm. hot, like, and Mateo Lane would more represent that. Like he's very muscular. He's like very attractive traditionally, and Jabuki too, like, and Joel Kim Booster, like they all kind of fit into that. And then there's like the drag queen who, you could see like, Trixie Mattel or like sure. that resonates with them on both of those mm-hmm. sides. But then I fit in the middle of that and like
half man, half woman.
Yeah.
Half human, half ginger.
Yes. And so it's hard for gay men to relate to me. Even before that, like you could see like Joan Rivers would more fit in, like who like gay men love would fit more into like the drag queen mm-hmm. category.
Well, yeah, gay men love their divas, that's for sure. Yeah.
We're not going to succeed if we only rely on ourselves for fandom. Mm-hmm. That's a clear thing. You have to win over hearts and minds of people that are not
yes,
gay men.
Yes, definitely. I think that's so important, especially to, not that like you have to have mainstream mm. success, but it'd be cool if there were like mm. they could achieve that.
Well, like we saw the drag Christmas show.
A Drag Queen Christmas. By Murray and Peter
Presents.
Starring Nina West and featuring Lady Bunny. Mm-hmm.
And you know, a good chunk of the audience was teenage girls.
Oh,
they're there for that. Well, it was gay men, teenage girls.
I also find it so moms. Funny that like drag queens are like, I think, really succeeding on like
TV drag queens.
TV drag queens.
Yeah.
Are succeeding with, I think, a mostly female fan base. Mm. And I think, and you look back at like Joan Rivers and like Kathy Griffin, and I think they mostly succeed on like a gay male fan base
and female. I would have to say, if you look at Kathy Griffin's audience, you'd see it's a lot of women and dragging their husbands along,
right?
That's for sure. You know, I'm also interested too, is like in high school you were performing and somebody called out a slur at you during your performance, and now you've kind of turned that slur around in your own head.
Yes. I love using the word faggot. It was faggot. That was a slur.
Sure.
I went on to sing like a song, and like, it was like the preview for our high school. So like everyone kind of got out of school for a second to like go to the auditorium and like listen to it. And I was singing the beginning of Can't Help Falling in Love. So I was like, wise men say, I don't know if that was good or not. Okay, cool.
I'll auto-tune it later.
Yeah. Please add in some. And
do you believe in life after love?
And wise men, and it was like faggot. I was like, I didn't really hear it. I just know that somebody yelled something and that I heard like laughter. Mm-hmm. And then after,
so you didn't know it was faggot.
I didn't know it was faggot until afterwards. And I heard,
and somebody came up to you like, they called you a faggot.
People just kept, and they, everyone came up and they're like,
that was so mean.
No, people did. Most of the teachers were like, and a lot of people have this reaction where they're like, well, I'm going to beat them up. Or like, if I was out there, and I'm like, okay, whatever. But
were you out at the time?
No, I was in the closet at the time. But and it's like, it's funny because I was very in the closet, and I was always until I graduated very afraid to like speak in front of the school or like perform in front of the school, which is something I had to do regularly. But it ended up working out. But I think it is part of the thing that, like, now faggot has become such, like, a funny word to me. because I think it's something that I've, like, personally tried to reappropriate and, like...
And you use it in your act against the audience.
Yes, I like to... I really love to call straight guys faggot. I think it's really funny.
What's the reaction like?
It really varies. I remember the other day I, like, called, like, a straight guy a faggot, and then, like, the audience was like... I'm like, you're straight, right?
They were not having it.
They were not having it. And okay. I'm like, you're straight, right? And then the audience... And then the guy was like, yeah. And I'm like... Okay, so everyone can calm down. And sometimes guys are like, oh, yeah, I'm a little, you know, like feeding into
it. Well, it's an interesting phenomenon that a lot of straight guys, cisgender, straight, heterosexual men, love to flirt with each other because they think homosexuality is such a lark and so hilarious.
Oh, my God. And if you, that's so much of stand-up, too, is why it pisses me off. Because I've been told before that I'm like... too gay, like in stand up, like they just see me as like a gay Pokemon. It's like gay, and then when I said I'm like gay.
But one time you called somebody a faggot, yes. And you outed them.
So I was like at the show, and I like I'm looking for a straight guy to call a faggot. The straighter the better, because that's funnier.
And how do you identify a straight guy?
Well, I throw out a little gaydar ping, okay. And I'm not saying I hit hundreds every time. I might have.
You recognize him from the hookup apps.
Yeah,
you're like, okay, I recognize this guy.
I go out and have girls and guys like hit on everyone, and I see who. No, I just feel it out, and okay. Usually you can tell, or like he's sitting with a woman, or like and you assume that they're dating, or and it's a lot of assumptions, but I was really having a hard time finding someone. I was like, I'm not sure that any of you are straight in the front row. I just chose a random guy, and I was like, but you're not gay, are you? But you're not straight, are you? You're gay. And then he's like, I'm like, and then I go on a riff, and I, when I'm like riffing as somebody and I'm kind of like roasting them, mm-hmm. I feel guilty a lot of the time. So I kind of like, I'm like, but you're like gay. And then I'm like, oh, sorry. And, but you're fucking that guy. Right. And I was like, and he's just kind of like laughing and like shaking his head. Like, oh, why? It's so silly. It's so silly. And, and then I eventually move on, after a hot little riff, and it was doing pretty well. And then he comes up to after me the show, and he's like, you know, you're like super funny. And I'm like, he has a gay voice. Not to, once again, I'm building on stereotypes that maybe are problematic, but I'm like, oh, so I was right. You are gay. And then once again, it's like the thing of like, what? And then, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't, and then like, he has this drunk girlfriend who he's with, and she pulls me in there, and she's like, yeah, listen, I've known him since sixth grade, and you were right. I'm pretty sure he's gay, and I'm pretty sure he's fucking that guy who's next to you that he made a joke about. And also, the reason you thought that there were no straight guys in the front row is because they're a big a cappella group who came together, and they were all sitting in the front row.
Oh, wow. A cappella means gay, right?
A cappella, basically. Yeah, that could you could... They're into
the Glee Club.
Yeah.
Wow. That's did you feel like a little bit guilty about that, or?
Oh, I felt super guilty about, and I actually kind of feel guilty about talking about it right now. I hope, I don't think that he would listen, but, and I, you what I told know. The girl immediately.
He's gay, might be.
Well, what would we be the worst thing? Listeners. And part of it is like, you know, it is an interesting situation where we're on stage and we're talking about our lives. We're talking about our feelings. And as comedians, we're inviting to be to treat this as something to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Laughter evolved in humanity as a way to deal with violence and tension. It was a friendlier way of getting over our desire to kill each other.
Right.
That's why when we laugh, we show our teeth.
Yeah.
Because it's an evolutionary advantage. Instead of murdering you, it's to laugh about something.
Yeah. And it's like I didn't feel. In some ways I'm like happy that like he got to see someone who was like openly gay and talking about these things and it's not like a gay show. It's just like it was a college show. It was marketed to college kids. But on the other hand, I did feel guilty. I just didn't want to make him uncomfortable. Like that, like, you know, like if you have that big secret, you know how it is when somebody points that out and you're like, no,
yeah, it's like being called a faggot when you're up on stage.
Yeah. So I just told the drunk girl, I was like, listen, He was a really, really cute guy. I was like, listen, this guy is going to keep fucking. And he has a cheerleader girlfriend who goes to another school. And oh. I was like, he's going to break up with his girlfriend. She's going to find someone better. He's going to find someone better. They're all going to have a good time. He'll come out soon. Or I imagine soon.
But also rich white kids.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So you're like,
yeah, he was fine.
You're the Ken doll of society. I'm not worried about you.
He was
you.
Cute. And the guy he was supposedly fucking allegedly was also very hot. They were like cute little like right in between.
Were you like, give me your number?
Well, part of the riff was that I was like part. And it sounds weird now. But I was like, we'll find out tonight. Like, kind of like the joke of like, oh, fuck yeah.
It's the real test.
Yeah.
Can you take the D or yeah. not?
So he'll have a great life and he'll figure it out. But I just told her, I was like, listen, he'll come out in his own time. It's one of those things you got to figure out on your own.
Along a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, you have a very sweet demeanor.
I do.
And
sometimes I do. I'm very kind.
As a comedian, you're sometimes roasting other comedians or audience members, and you kind of have a remorse about that. Roaster's remorse.
I do. I wonder what kind of comedian I would be if I started in like 2008, like in terms of like, I might just be like a roasting, like, you know, but I just feel so guilty about it, especially as like time has gone on and my natural proclivity is to just kind of like roast someone, especially when just being like talking to the audience, but then I'll kind of feel bad about it. So I'll be like, you little fuck. I know I'm doing a Mae West. I can't think of a good roast for this invisible person. But I'm like, you little fucker. And then I'll be like, but I'm sorry.
Why don't you just imagine the last person you roasted and speak to them.
Okay. It was one of those college shows, and I don't remember anything that you know what, the last person I roasted, it was actually at an open mic, which doing crowd work at an open mic is always a mistake, but
basically they're all comedians.
Yeah.
And they're all like, they're all thinking.
They're already like, I can't wait to talk about myself. So you don't need to give them another opportunity to talk. But, so I like just kind of do like the basic, like I always start out my just like, how's everyone feeling tonight? You know, the generic. Mm-hmm. I mean, some comedian girl was like bad. And I go, oh, why do you feel bad? And she's like, well, you asked me. And I'm like, yeah. And now I'm asking you why you feel bad. And she's like, well, I mean, we're comedians. We all feel bad. And I remember the last thing I said, it's bold to call yourself a comedian. We're at this open mic. We're all people who do comedy. I don't know. Calling yourself a comedian at this open mic. I don't know your name. And so that was probably, and I felt really guilty that.
She had it coming.
Yeah, a little bit.
If she couldn't back up her bullshit, she had it coming.
She wasn't doing it to be mean particularly, but it is just like, I think sometimes people also take on an identity that's like kind of to excuse, not to to like kind of like be like, well, I'm a comedian, so of course I feel sad. I'm like, well, you could find a way to get around that, you know. But yeah, that was the last roast I remember doing, and I feel guilty about it.
We'd like to remind listeners that today is December 3rd, which is a National Day of Giving. Also, National Sandwich Day.
Ooh.
Delicious.
Yummy.
And this holiday season, consider stuffing your stocking with Feast of Fun. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and consider becoming a member today. We've been doing this podcast for 15 years. Which is an amazing amount of time. And over the course of the years, we've been using the same microphones and cables and mixers. And they're about to have, they've had it officially, just like the drag queens.
And so we have a GoFundMe set up at GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun, where you can make a contribution to keep this show going, to ensure its future. So we are around in the next few years. We're only here because in the past, people just like you have stepped up to the plate and said, hey, I really enjoy the show. I enjoy hearing from people like Beckett Kenny, and I want to hear more. And we can't do it unless we have your support. Again, that's GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun. And if you're in the mood to buy somebody a little stocking stuffer, you can visit our store at FeastOfFun.com/store.
Yeah, if you have somebody who doesn't shave, like their armpits or their legs. their cooters.
Their butt.
Yeah, you can get a not shaven, gives me more time for misbehaving in either gender. You know, it is binary gender, so we don't have like a non-binary version, but we're working on it. And you can get that at feastoffun.com/store. I want to do a shout out to Joe Adame. Forgive me, Joe, if I'm mispronouncing your name. He wrote, "It is important to give what we can on National Sandwich Day."
Aww.
And National Day of Giving. During this charitable time of year, why not support something that supports the community and gets people's voices out and is able to tell their stories, like Beckett Kenny? And Jeff Wright says, "I am a longtime listener and supporter of Feast of Fun. Keep up the great work. Hope this money replaces one of the microphones you guys have."
Thank you guys so much.
"And replaces it with a stone, because I hate hearing your voice." I'm just kidding.
Becca, what kind of sandwiches do you like?
Oh, honey, I like all sandwiches. I think right now I'm in a mood for like a hot sandwich, like a roast beef or something. Ooh. Like a hot, like an Italian beef or something.
Mm.
What about you, Mark? What's your...
I like a hot beef, but I like a French dip. That's what I like. Yeah.
Well, I think it's important to have the dip.
You know, this. I used to work as a graphic designer, and I would pre-interview people at a gay newspaper.
Oh.
Back when gay newspapers were a thing. And beneath me was a Starbucks. And during the holiday season, I was always look forward to having one of their sandwich Thanksgiving grandma's cranberry turkey stuffing sandwich, where they've discontinued because corporations have to fuck things up that are delicious and good and replace it with stones and rocks. Anyways, it was a very delicious whole wheat bread stuffed with turkey, cranberry sauce, turkey stuffing, and romaine lettuce, and it was the most delicious sandwich I ever had in my life. And I love eating those things, but unfortunately I have to make it myself.
There was this thing called an Oreo brownie earthquake that I used to get at Dairy Queen all the time, and it was
a sandwich
monster. Yeah. no, sorry, now I'm talking about discontinued like things.
Yes.
This was like an ice cream thing, and it's one of those foods that you kind of go like, I'm addicted to those terrible foods for you that's like foods that were made by accident. You know what I mean? Like the Frankenstein, like of foods where it's like, how did like all this shit get into one piece? Like it was like,
it's like synergy that makes it better.
Yeah. It was like Oreo. It was like brownie. It was like hot fudge. It was like marshmallow fluff. It was like everything. And, they discontinued it. And I've
been really into recreating delicious foods from my childhood. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Mark and I are going to be making this holiday season is pasteles de yuca, which is what is yuca in English for people?
Yuca.
There's another word for it, but it's basically like
a root vegetable
that they you shred and you make like tamales out of it, but with banana leaves instead of corn husks, and they're boiled in water. And they're absolutely delicious. Mm. And you can pan fry them after you've cooked them to get the edges nice and crispy and caramelized. It's chewy and wonderful. And there's also Mallorcas, which Starbucks used to carry, which I was like, how is this rare, obscure Spanish pastry doing in a Starbucks in the Midwest? And they would actually toast it for you, and you could put butter in it. And it's a brioche that is shaped like a turban.
Uh-huh.
And you can slice them and pan fry them, and it's absolutely unbelievably good. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because one of the biggest news items of the week is the police officers who ordered their coffee drinks, and on the coffee drinks they wrote pig. Because all cats are beautiful.
Well, they wrote pig, and then the police chief of this town in Oklahoma took a picture of it, tweeted it out, and then the store manager got fired for it. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, these baristas throughout the country are chiming in and saying, there's no way that could have been like printed up by the person who actually worked there. That had to have been like a mobile order, and they wrote pig, but then they put the asterisks next to it because that will thwart the system, because it doesn't show up because they have a filter. So you can't be like, fuck me hard, or whatever.
Right. Derogative language, slur words.
Yes. Those kinds of things. And this person's fired, and they got fired, and has since been talking and been like, it's not fair. It's not why
the manager of the Starbucks.
Yeah, the manager. I'm the scapegoat for this kind of thing. But then I think the real topper of it all is, you know, the police chief who tweeted the photo. It wasn't his order. It was somebody who works with him. Like, it was his order, but he was there and he was got a recipient of one of the coffee cups. His daughter took to Twitter and then was just like, here, let me read her tweet. She goes, "This is my father, and I'd like to say that he is absolutely a pig, and I'd like to thank the brave men and women from Starbucks for their service," because she's just, for the record, my father has zero business being a police officer. He was blatantly, proudly racist when I was a kid, said things that I would never repeat. He treats women like dogs, including his own daughter. Oink. Oink.
Wow.
So people like from Starbucks and, you know, employees and people are all, they're like, you're like, you are my new hero, that kind of thing. And now all the police officers involved are like, it's the past now. We don't want to talk about it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's one of those things.
Blue Lives Matter. Right.
I just think that's so silly. I don't grow up a little bit. Like, if you can't really take being called a pig, I wish that would have happened to me in high school instead of being called a faggot, but interrupting my performance. Someone gives me a pig. Starbucks mm-hmm. cup that says faggot. That yeah. would have been great.
But the ultimate here, the yeah, thing is the like thing. They put it in their yeah. order. Mm-hmm. They're the ones, the police officer who put in the order, thwarted the system by putting the word pig himself. Because mm-hmm. like think about
allegedly,
it
seems as though that's what it was. We don't
you
know.
Can't, you, if you're doing a mobile order for a Starbucks mm-hmm. coffee, the there's no way for example, think about it this logically, someone's picking up that order. If you mm-hmm. if the barista who's making the order has the ability to change the name, then you're gonna, when you get there to pick up your order, you're gonna be like, I don't know who this pig is. My yeah. name is Fausto, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I totally believe that. I also don't, I mean, he would have to, it's possible that he did know that this guy was a cop or that he comes in a lot or something, but how would you
know for his, a mobile order who right, the person placing
did
it
his
is?
Name, like what was his job? Like, you know, that's, I doubt it. Also, if you're the cop who like, who wrote down pig like on the Starbucks coffee cup to like look like a victim and posted mm-hmm. to Twitter, like, look at this thing that's, you know, like, shitty do you have to be as a person? Yeah. Like,
so I think it was the cop. He did it on his own because he thought it was kind of like a bit of a joke. Like, he's making fun of himself.
And I think that's okay.
And so he ordered like five things. And like, when the captain got it, he was just like, what the fuck is this? And then, of course, you know,
and then he was like,
outrage culture, attention seeking, that kind of stuff. And so he was, you know, he took to Twitter with it or told the news about it, and then it went everywhere. You know, and it's kind of reminds me of, you've seen the meme of like the Christians' war on Christmas or the war on Christmas. And it's like this little boy with like a boot on his neck.
Yeah.
And then the next photo is like the boy actually has his hand in the boot and is crushing his own neck.
Well, you that's know? The thing is like, it's like, that would be something that like a police officer would do who like doesn't really understand. Like, I don't know for sure that like maybe the guy like made it as a joke and then he gave his like the chief of police and then the chief of police thought it was like an offensive thing. And then maybe the guy didn't own up to it. But like, if you were to be like a police officer and you were like, I put down in my Starbucks order pig and then like post on Twitter, like, look at how mean people are to me. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's such a, like an insane, it's something that somebody who plants evidence would do, you know?
Well, certainly, you know, if police officers feel that society doesn't respect them and that they're not being adequately paid or protected for whatever reason, that also matters to listen to it. And maybe say, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the reason that society thinks all cats are beautiful is because you guys, you know what that means, right?
I don't.
All cops are bad cops, but you can't say that on the internet. So you say all cats are beautiful.
Oh, you can't say that? Is it like blocked?
Yeah, it's considered like hate speech against police officers.
Oh, all cats are beautiful.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
So when you ever see someone says all cats are beautiful, they mean all cops are bad cops.
Oh, wow.
And so part of it is like, if police officers feel that this persecuted, mm-hmm. they might want to step back and say, well, why do people mistrust us? Right. Why are there so much animosity towards us? And maybe addressing some of the systemic racism and violence against marginalized people that they do. You know, if you're really sincere, if you really are deep in your heart a Blue Lives Matter person, mm-hmm. you would speak out against systemic violence and racism by police officers, not help erase it, not help cover it up.
Right.
And especially when police officers murder someone, that person shouldn't be suspended without pay. They should be put behind bars. You know, that to me, like, it is like, it's such an obvious thing. And I have friends who are police officers and we talk about this, and they're the ones who are not all cops are horrible, awful people.
Right.
Some of them are very frustrated, but they don't even feel like they have the ability to step forward, because then they'll be targeted by the violent racist people on the force themselves.
Yeah. And it is hard. Like, to be in that situation where I'm in a much more minor, like, much less high consequence situation, but sometimes you're in a group of comedians and somebody says something really like shitty, and it's like, what am I supposed to do now? You know what I mean? You like, sometimes you're speaking up and you know you're not going to help the person. Mm-hmm. You know you're not going to change things for the better, and you're just putting yourself at risk.
And sometimes you're just like, they're going to learn their lesson someday.
Yeah, hopefully. You know? Knock on wood.
You know.
Well, and some of my friends who've been police officers, they're so relieved when they're able to leave the force, and they're like, oh my God, it's like that horrible job that you had working at that bar that nobody tipped you and everybody pulled a gun on you every night. You know, it's like a lot of people who are retired or have left the police force look at it as a point in their life, a dark point in their lives where they were really struggling, and that job did not alleviate a lot of their pain and suffering.
Well, I know this one, this is kind of a segue, but I know this one comedian friend I have, and they do a different type of comedy, but like, they're like in this like sketch show, and everyone who got cast in it is white. And then they're like, well, I should quit. But at the same time, they're at a place where they're another marginalized person, but not like a person of color. They're just a white person. But then they were told, well, if you quit, the people who are like underneath you, they're white people. So if you quit, it's just going to be another white person cast in your place. Also, they're like they're like a person who like represents a marginalized group. So it's like, if they're quitting, they're kind of taking away another layer of diversity, and like, more diversity isn't going to come in. And so they're like in a real like, they feel very guilty about it, but also as an artist, it's such a hard thing to like take, like say no to that like platform or that money, because there's so few ways that you can get paid as a comedian.
There's a few ways to get paid as an artist, period.
And yeah, that's true. And
And part of it is like, you know, because the income of an artist or any American has not gone up in 20 or 30 years. So in fact, it's gone down. So the cost of living goes up, inflation goes up, but the minimum wage stays the same.
Right.
And the average salary stays the same or even goes lower.
Right.
We have less money and less free time.
Yeah.
And, you know, food goes up. The cost of food, the cost of rent goes up. So we're struggling and hustling even more just to make ends meet.
Yeah, it's so hard.
And, you know, and part of it, I think, you know, if we want to make the world a better place for artists, we have to fight for universal basic income. We have to fight for universal health care, access to education. Yeah. So you can have your art job and pursue your passions as an artist as well.
And so you don't have to put yourself in these demeaning situations. Like, if you don't believe in something, well, like, not saying that happens all the time, but if you don't believe in something, you should have the opportunity to be like, if I say no to this because I don't believe in this project, like, I won't be fucked over for like months, you know?
I would love to see you be a little Orphan Annie in a musical.
I think I need to put together a production of an adult production of Little Orphan Annie the musical.
Except you're looking for a sugar daddy.
Yeah.
say it's a hard cock life.
But I'll play. I also want to be this is literally
a burlesque Annie.
Like a one line in the musical, but I'm obsessed with that. You know, in NYC where she goes, NYC, just got here this morning. You know that?
Yeah, no.
What about it?
It's like the classic, like the girl comes in with two bags and she's like, I'm making it in the big city.
Have you ever been to New York City?
I have.
Okay.
I know it's not like that.
You got there, you're like, oh, it's just another city, just like anywhere.
Well, but I do have those like, I have like a lot of like fantastic notions about like New York. I think that like I have images in my head, and some of them are like, you're coming in with two bags off like the train, and you're like, oh wow, look at all these bright lights. And another one is like, this is much simpler, but it's like being in a New York apartment and ordering Chinese food from those little containers, like those little white containers with
I love that.
that's like, there's something very glamorous about that to me.
No, yeah.
I've seen that happen in so many sitcoms where they're like in this like cute New York apartment and they're ordering Chinese
food. Nobody in New York cooks. They all get takeout.
Yeah.
Everything's takeout.
That's why when we do cooking with drag queens, all the drag queens that are from New York are like looking at the kitchen. Except for Bob the drag queen, because Bob worked in a restaurant.
But like Perfidia and her, we recorded in her own home, and she had her gas stove disconnected like 15 years ago.
Right.
She's just like, I never used it, so I'm like, why am I paying for gas?
Well, people are moving away from cooking. Like, it's a trend. Mm-hmm. Like, people eat out more. People order out more.
And that's distressing, because it's more expensive.
It's so much more expensive.
And you can make so many delicious things, like Maryland-style crab cakes.
Ooh! I'm cooking with drag queens this week with Peaches Christ. Mm-hmm. Go to youtube.com/feastoffun and look at it, honeys. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good.
Mm. I want to do a shout-out to Jonathan Van Ness, who is going to be the first non-female cover star of Cosmopolitan UK in 35 years.
Cover girl, put the bass in your wok.
Becca, can you guess who was the last non-female cover person on Cosmopolitan UK?
Can you tell me what time it was?
35 years ago. So that would have been like 1984. Is that right?
It was Sean Connery.
That's the year I was born.
You were born in... No.
No, sorry, 1994. I mixed up several numbers there.
Because you're 1998. Only
21. I mixed up who was a lot man, of numbers
Who would have
there.
Been a man Jeez. Who was on a Cosmo, which is kind of like the gossip rag for women
in the UK.
In the UK.
Cosmo UK.
In the year you were born, basically.
Not the year you
no,
were
this
born.
No, this is actually earlier, much before when I was born.
Years before you were
I
born.
Can't believe I said that. That wow. I dropped out of Clown College and it shows.
Clown College dropout.
Boy George.
You're right.
Was I right?
Yeah,
oh my right. God, I am so yeah. good.
Hold on. Karma
Look
Chameleon.
At girl.
All right.
You win the
I don't
quiz.
Know math, but I know.
That's impressive. That was nowhere near my mind.
Oh, really? Who did you think it was?
Sean Connery.
Now, the One Direction, the boys from One Direction were in there a few years ago in 2012, but
they don't count
the
as
first
women,
time is,
as
yeah,
men.
There was a group of them, so okay. It's much different.
Right,
this
right.
is one single person.
Damn, Jonathan Van Ness is that big of a star?
He's everywhere.
Well, you know
days.
What?
Wow.
I said that there's no, like...
That's impressive.
And they're not... Oh, do they... I heard that he is non-binary, but he uses binary pronouns, and I'm not...
Don't we all?
Okay.
I actually went to it was a Game of Thrones party, and he was there.
Yeah, because Game of Thrones, right? Yeah.
And so I dressed up... And I put on like a Game of Thrones like regal kind of female outfit, and then I put on a black wig and just like I don't even know if I wore any makeup at all, maybe just a little tiny bit of makeup.
Right.
And I went to the party, and people thought I was
Jonathan Van Ness,
and of course I didn't tell them any different. You know? I did steal their wallets though, so they got real weirded out.
They're like, Jonathan Van Ness, you stole my wallet, you asshole.
But he's very successful. I think he like sold out the Chicago theater.
Yeah,
he's kind of doing stand up now.
Yeah, and he's from I think the area. I think he's from one of the south suburbs.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah.
So many people
he's
are
like
from
Kankakee or Joliet or something like that. Now in Australia, there is a lesbian who went a little wild and smashed up her mother's car with a baseball bat.
Damn.
And you know the reason why?
Why?
Because her girlfriend and her mother started having an affair.
Whew.
And so she broke up with her girlfriend, and then her mother moved in with the girlfriend and their children. And I guess she just couldn't handle
Whoa.
It. She was just like, God damn it.
Do you know how she discovered her mother was having an affair with her girlfriend?
How?
She saw a hickey on her mom's neck.
And her girlfriend liked to give hickeys, I guess.
Oh. And she was like, those lips are look familiar.
I also just recently found out, I'm not going to give any indications, but I found out that two of my friends were having an affair, mm-hmm. and they're both like in other relationships based on like that. Like, so like for a second I was like,
based
how?
On hickey?
No, not on hickey, but based on like, just like one interaction, I was like, and it wasn't like a, it was just like,
it's a tell.
And I'm
a
like,
little tell, and you're
I'm
like,
And so for a second I was like, a hickey is kind of like a broad thing to mm-hmm. like make an assumption of, because a lot of people give a hickeys.
Well, but some people are into hickeys more than others, so I'm guessing that the girlfriend's really into giving hickeys, and then she saw one on the mother and was just like, ooh.
There must
but
have been I, way I, more signs, though.
Yeah. I'm the kind of thing, if you're out of high school, hickeys are, mean you're pure trash.
Oh, really? Like,
you know, that you would give somebody a hickey like that is just like...
I've given you hickeys before.
Marking, I don't know, you haven't. Yeah. It's like you're marking territory. Like, it's weird.
You get very like passionate, and sometimes you just want to devour the person that you're with. Mm-hmm. I can't help it if I have passion.
It's like the kind of the act of doing it is kind of hot, but then like the aftermath is not. I remember I used to do it to myself all the time. I don't. Did you guys ever do that where like what? you realize if you like sucked on your skin, you could like leave like a red.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I like one time I had them all over and my mom like saw it and was like, what is going on?
We used to bite each other. So we would leave teeth marks as kids. And then we would pretend it was a rotary phone and you could die. It looked like a phone thing.
Have you ever given yourself? Did you grow up in the Great Depression?
My parents had a rotary phone until like the year 2002.
I believe that. No.
Beckett, have you ever given or received a rug burn? An Indian burn, I think they call it. It's
I don't think I've received a proper Indian
burn. Give me your arm. I'll do it for you.
Don't do it.
No, I don't want to.
I'll be very gentle. I'll just show you how it works.
No, I know how it works.
Okay. So you do know.
I know how it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that were they like twisting your in opposite direction?
I don't think I've ever had it to where like you see it.
Yeah, and you know, if you're gentle about it, you can get the idea of how painful it can be very quickly.
Yeah, I believe you.
But it's like it's the kind of thing that like kids do to each other where they're always just like torturing each other. You know, and it's just, like, they're always looking at ways. I don't know if you guys ever played this game where you would try to push the air out of somebody's chest. To make them pass out.
It's called burking.
This happened to me in high school where I was like, I don't believe that you can smother someone with a pillow. And I had someone try and smother me and I'm like, I can still breathe. But like still like the act of doing that is like
it's gotta be painful.
It wasn't. It's not
well,
that
you
bad.
Had a big mouth. So.
Have you ever like, stuck your hand on one of those electrical things that make your hair stand on end?
Van de Graaff.
I think
generator.
So. One of those. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to see that because you have amazing.
I already
red kinky hair.
I am
holding back the tears. Simply red, honey.
Yeah.
What do you want for Christmas?
I haven't even thought about that. No. I haven't thought about that at all.
Are you going to go home to Peoria for the holidays?
Probably for a second. I probably won't be there for too long because it's hard to get off work for long periods of time.
Mm.
I probably will. I haven't thought about what I want. I also am very stressed about what I will give. Last year, like around Christmas time, I weirdly had like a lot of money. And I remember
from what?
I won like a stand up competition and like I like got like $1,000, which to me is monster money.
That's
I don't know.
A lot
like,
of money.
Yeah. It's the most I've ever been paid for a gig. And I like I've been able to basically maintain that. It happened like in fall, but it was able to maintain that. Mm-hmm. And Christmas is when like it destroyed me. I've been broke ever since.
Hold back,
baby.
Hold back.
I'm giving people songs this year. I'm giving people Glee style performances.
Aww,
I'm not.
That's very sweet.
I don't know.
People who are big supporters of Feast of Fun, we do give mail out boxes of cookies, homemade cookies, and that's a you know it's
that's
not
like
a bad
thing
way. To support someone or to show you love.
Too, yeah.
Well, you know, the butter, listen, butter cake ain't free, honey. Butter and sugar, shit. I was like, a block of butter, I was looking at the grocery store, it was like $5 almost. And I was just like, when did butter get so expensive?
There's this one really expensive butter that that sometimes I get when I'm feeling like, have you ever had Kerrygold?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. It's not that expensive. But sometimes I say,
you know,
maybe it's not that expensive, but like, I remember that was fancy to me.
You're like, usually butter your bread with Crisco.
Yeah.
And your butt.
Yeah. I normally butter my bread with just
lube.
whatever I'm able to find.
Rebecca, I hope you have a great holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me.
Of course. I hope you come back sometime. I think you're very
charming.
Yeah,
I would love to.
Really
thank you.
I really am going to catch your act one of these
days. Yes, you have to. You should come to Sachet.
I will.
Plug
yourself.
It's the Laugh Factory every third Friday of the month. The next one is December 20th. I don't know when this is coming out.
Queer comedy and drag
yes.
at the Laugh Factory, the third
Friday of every month, 10 p.m.
Sashay and Shantae. And so it's a, you had a Miss Cracker there recently, didn't you?
I didn't have Miss Cracker. Miss Cracker did a show at the Laugh Factory. She like did her like one woman show.
I bet you were there for it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And she said, you look weird. Come on stage. Let's take a photo together.
I was actually only a worker there.
Oh, you were an employee.
I was only an employee. So, but she, I remember I was very nervous because that was the first celebrity I knew at the Laugh Factory who was coming in. And I remember I was like, oh my God, this is, cause this was like in my like first month working there.
And, quick quiz. What season was she from?
Season 10.
There you go. Some people are like, I love this drag queen. And they're like,
Who is she?
I saw her on television.
Yeah.
Once. So
is that your regular gig then? Is that your big comedy? And then you appear in other people's shows?
Laugh Factory. And I also run Undergrad Underground, which is the college show I was talking about. Okay. And that's every other Thursday. Although we take hiatuses when like school is off. It's mostly marketed towards DePaul kids, but anyone can come. It's a great show.
Okay, where's that at?
That's at the Playground Theater. And okay. I do shows all over the town. If you want to follow my Instagram.
Is that it? Instagram?
At Bucket with two T's. Kenny.
Bucket or Bucket?
It's Bucket for like, the Instagram.
Drop the bucket.
Yeah, like, yeah. Just a little T's. A little taste of my trash.
Well, I'll check that out as well. Well, thank you for coming on.
Of course, thank you guys.
And I want to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus.
I want to thank everybody for listening and thank Beckett Kenny, our gingerlicious comedian.
Thank you. What if I finish this with a little ASMR?
You no. Do I get it? What are you saying?
Did you not hear that at all?
I did.
Was that completely silent?
You were going to put that up your ass? What'd you say?
He picked up a guido, which is a gourd scratching thing from Puerto Rico. And
do you guys watch ASMR? I'm sorry. And you're trying to close and I keep popping into ASMR.
Have
you
Seen? Yes.
Okay, cool.
What, do you know what ASMR stands for?
Autonomous meridian set autonomous AS. Okay. Autonomous sensory meridian response.
And why do they call it that exactly?
It's like the thing that gives you tingles in your head. That's like the response.
Oh, because it's delicate. It stimulates a certain part of your brain by whispering.
I think scientifically that's what it's called. So that they like, so like basically all of the like things that trigger it have been called put under the umbrella of ASMR.
And so what they do is a lot of videos is people like scratching or rubbing things with the volume cranked all the way up.
Yes.
So if you actually did talk normally, it would break your eardrums.
Right.
So it's picking up on the little delicate scratches in the room and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And some people have made a real career out of it.
Yeah. No, you can make money off of that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the thing is like really fascinating about like YouTube is all these weird celebrities pop up and they're like, I'm the guy who scratches.
How about that lady
things.
Eats pickles?
Yeah, know? That's all she does.
Or you'll just see like a random YouTube and you'll be like, oh, you have millions of subscribers. I don't know who you are. And you like your whole thing is like breaking bottles. Like it's like you never know. Yeah. It's a wild place.
Yeah. Experiment, honey. Because sometimes
the, find your groove, yeah.
the best experiments yield the most unexpected results.
Okay.
Ooh. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with the day that's gray and lonely, I just stick up my chin.